Hello there, everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm a Rob Wilson type.
And I'm a Samuel Cooke type.
And this is Reaccess Hollywoo, which is, to our knowledge, the first and only BoJack Horseman rewatch podcast. That's right, we're going right back to the beginning of the most depressing show on Netflix. So, Sam, when did you first start watching BoJack? And have you rewatched it before today, or is this your first rewatch?
So, I started, I think, the week it came out.
Oh, cool. Right, okay. Yeah, you were way ahead of me then.
And yeah. I don't know why, I think I'd run out of things to watch, and I thought, I like this voice cast, and I think it was one of the first like Netflix originals, so
yes,
let's give it a go. And then here we are. I've rewatched it a few times, introduced the show to a few people, and they've carried it on and stuff, but I do like to feel like I were kind of there first, so.
Yeah, my experience is a little different, actually. I was always aware of it, but I spent most of my time on Netflix, like, watching just other things, like Orange is the New Black, or catching up on Community when Community was on Netflix,
or
It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, or Peep Show, or something like that. And then one day, I think it was April 2017, so about 18 months ago, I was around at a friend's house, and he was like, "Oh, have you seen BoJack Horseman?" And I said, no, I haven't. I've heard it's quite sad, though. Like, I heard that one of the characters gets cancer in the third season or something like that. And he was like, no, it's not quite right, but it's, you know, you're kind of in the right ballpark. So, you know, we sat down and watched it. I enjoyed the first episode, and I think we watched up to, like, episode 3. And I think we eventually finished the first season together. Like, we watched the first 3 episodes together. Then I did episodes, like, 4 to 10 or whatever, on my own, and then I think I went round to his to like finish season 1 and then start season 2, and like, you know, the first season is good, but I think the first 3 seasons were already out, and I caught up in time for season 4. So, but it's quite funny because I have rewatched the show once with my parents, once with my girlfriend, and once just kind of like by myself or with a couple of friends, you know, like catching the odd episode here and there. So I've seen this show like a few times now, and what can I say? I think that it has very obvious points where it gets better, and then it gets better, and then it gets better, and then it kind of, it's sort of since like the middle of season 3, I think it's been at like a really like exemplary level in a number of different ways, and I can't wait to get to certain episodes and talk about them, because I think this is like a nice point to segue. Like, you know, the first season has a funny kind of reputation, because if you look at its like Metacritic score, it's got like 55, and like apparently it changed the way that the Ringer magazine actually write about TV shows now, because usually, for people who are listening and don't know, I mean, I'm sure you do know, but like, usually, like TV networks, they will send out screeners, like the first 3 or 4 episodes of a new season of television, and then the person who's covering that show for a particular magazine or website or whatever will write about the first 3 or 4 episodes, and they'll summarize their feelings about it, and then they will give an overall score based on those 3 episodes or 4 episodes, and then that will be the score that gets stuck on the internet forever. Whereas like Rotten Tomatoes metric is now slightly different, where like they do episode by episode scores and then add them together and like get like a mean average. And the Ringer kind of noticed that the second half of the season of BoJack Horseman, like the first season, is like loads better than the first half, and they were like, right, we're not going to write about TV shows in that way anymore. We're going to wait until the whole season is out, do a whole season, or just do episode by episode coverage. We're not gonna like judge a whole season of TV based on 3 or 4 episodes. So I think it's been pretty influential like that, and I think the Ringer are right. Like, I don't think the first half of the season of BoJack is as bad as some people seem to think that it is, and I also don't think that it gives you a rug to pull. I've heard of quite a lot of people saying, oh yeah, the first half of the season just gives you a rug to pull, and like, and then it gets really depressing. I think the features of BoJack being depressed are always there. It's just that they're just not as good as writing it as they get later on.
No, but, I mean, I think you can see it from the beginning with episode one and two, where there's depression there. It's just not as in your face, maybe. Not in your face in a bad way as it gets, but...
Yeah, because, I mean, this works as, like, a nice segue into, like, the first episode, actually, but, like, what kind of guy who is just an asshole and not depressed sits watching endless reruns of a TV show he was on 20 years ago while drinking copious amounts of beer and clearly on some kind of medication, letting some rando in Todd crash at his house, and he's clearly not in a good state. And, like, I always think about the theme tunes at this stage of the show.
Yeah.
Because the first sort of, like, well, the first season isn't that serious, really, but, like, the theme tune at both ends of the show, they kind of bookend it. Like, Bojack just kind of wanders through his house staring throughout the whole of the theme tune.
Yeah.
While everything happens around him.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, the lyrics to the theme song at the end, like, they're still the same. Like, it's still, you know, back in the 90s, I was in a very famous TV show, and it's like, you know, am I more horse than a man? I'm trying to hold on to my past. I don't know if I can last, that kind of stuff. And it's always been there since the beginning. I just don't think that the show was always that good at communicating it. I think they did get confused between Bojack being depressed and Bojack being an arsehole. I think the depressed stuff is just... it's lower than subtext in the first few episodes, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's lots of lines about how he hates himself and stuff like that, but it's kind of presented for comedy rather than like, oh my God, I really hate myself. Let's analyze myself. Let's, you know, there's not so much self-flagellation as it is like, oh, I hate myself. What do you expect? I'm rich and famous. Go away from me. Like, that's kind of how Bojack strikes me in the first episode anyway.
Yeah, the first episode, I mean, as you were saying earlier, where they're talking about how angry he is, even he's angry with himself as well.
Yeah.
But if you contrast that with, I think is it season four's stupid piece of shit episode, and that's
done.
And then you go back to season one, and he's just not a nice guy.
No. I mean, to be honest, it's something that I think season five did a really good job of reckoning with right until the very, very end, that like the show has kind of built Bojack up into this person where like he isn't likable. Like, I don't understand how you can like him. Like, it's something that Diane makes a really good point of towards the end of season five, where she's like, there are actual victims in your wake. Like, Sarah Lynn is dead because of you. Like, you might not have killed her, but it's your fault that she's dead.
Yeah.
And I think it's something that the show has always nearly reckoned with, but also not quite reckoned with, because in the end, Bojack is still the protagonist, and Bojack is still the person that we have to, like, relate to the most for most of the show. Like, his name is on it, and it must be... I always thought there's a line that gets taken from season five. I think it's... is it Flip, the character played by Rami Malek, the script writer for Filbert?
Yeah.
Where he's talking about how, like, he wanted Filbert to be, like, an analysis of, like, the worst of human traits, but then it became so popular that, like, it became an excuse for people to justify their own bullshit behaviour. And I think the writers of Bojack were kind of commenting on what the show has become since this first episode, where, like, this first episode, I don't think Bojack is necessarily likable, but it's kind of, it's presented as, like, something, not, I wouldn't quite say, like, Family Guy, but it has a similar kind of approach where it's, like, slightly okay humour. Like, I don't think it's, like, I don't even think it's an average episode. I think it's decent. I think it's solid. It's just, I think it has a bit of an unfair reputation.
It's just but... so much better than episode two. I mean, I think it's a perfect introduction to him. It's a perfect introduction to, I think, like, the depths that I think Bojack would later reach, or like the writers would later reach. But it's just, the episode's constantly having like flashbacks and like cutaway gags, which just, I'm not digging at all.
I think that's where I draw the Family Guy comparison with all the cutaway stuff. Like, remember this? And, like, I mean, there's one cutaway gag that really works for me in the middle, when Princess Carolyn says to BoJack that he's shown with his actions that he doesn't want a child. And then they go to that scene where he basically causes a car crash when she thinks about having a baby. Or, yeah. Like, doesn't even barely suggest it. And then, because they end it with that, the main punchline of the joke, really, is the... Yeah, oh, definitely. But there's just, it's worth it for that bit at the end where it's like, hey, aren't you the horse from Horsing Around?
Yeah.
Which is kind of something that gets developed in the first season. But I mean, I've always liked the very, very beginning of the episode, actually. The scene with Charlie Rose.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's a couple of bits in it that are just a bit like, you know, this is the show that it was and not the show that it is, where he's like BoJack kind of going, twisting round his own mind to try and wonder whether he can say handicapped or not to refer to the disabled space that he's parked in outside the building. And I just, it's not something that the show would joke about now. It's not a joke that the show would go for. Like, I'm not saying, like, it's an offensive joke or anything. It's not, because it's... BoJack is stumbling over his own language because he's an idiot. That's the joke. But it's just not, like... It's the level of humour that I just don't think... It's an easy... Like, it's like an easier way in kind of joke. Like, oh, he's an idiot. He doesn't know the difference between... Like, the fact that it's not culturally or, you know, socially acceptable to say the word handicapped anymore when you're referring to disabled people and that kind of stuff. And it's, you know, it's fine. Like, and there's a couple of good visual gags in that little scene, like the when he's on that track with Run DMC, the trot this way, which I thought was, you know, quite funny. But, yeah, I mean, what do you make of that scene? I really love the animation, by the way. A lot of people say that the first season looks a bit crappy compared to, like, later seasons, but I actually don't mind it. Like, there's a couple of side characters and characters in the background that look a bit rough in these first few episodes, but the lighting that they get with just the like solo light hanging over that one table, I've always really enjoyed looking at that. I think it's a great scene to kind of just kind of quietly ease your way into a new season of television.
I mean, the first for the first time that we actually see BoJack, I think that's I think it's my favourite scene, at least of the episode. I mean, just looking at him as a character, you've got him where he's I think he said something like about horsing around. It's not Ibsen, and then his mum says that, and so. When you go through the entire series and about how much of a struggle it is to get them two to like each other, but one of the first like lines he says is a line that his mother says, and I don't know, there's something about that that's really, I don't know, is it poignant or is it just clutching, maybe, but I don't know.
I don't think it is clutching, because there are elements of this episode that are, this is actually what makes me really like this, there are bits of this first episode, I want to defend it more than the second one, because there are elements of this episode that are still, they're very in keeping with character and they're very consistent, and it shows that even when the writing wasn't as tight on a, say, like a surface level, where you have two characters, one talking to each other, maybe what they're saying isn't that entertaining, maybe the jokes aren't that funny, but in terms of the character's nature, there are so many things in this episode that I can pick up on, or that I have picked up on, or that you've just picked up on there with the Ibsen thing, that shows that the stuff that happens later has always kind of been in their character. Like, there's no... I wouldn't call it, like, a continuity error or anything like that, but I was thinking to myself, like, Diane ends this episode at a party, and, like, you know, as season 2, 3, 4, and 5 explain, she does not do parties, she doesn't like parties, she doesn't like... what other people would call fun. Like, you know, she's awkward, she doesn't like it. But then in this episode, she just says, like, parties make me kind of anxious. And isn't that just so nice that you can go back to, like, the first episode of something, even in its kind of inauspicious, kind of, like, average beginnings, and still know that even on some level, they were planning for the future, or at least in the future, when they were writing later seasons, that they went right back to the first episode and really listen to what the characters were saying and how these things could inform their characters later on. Like, I think it kind of enhances later stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, it is intentional with these with these writers. I think it'd be unfair to say that it isn't, just because of how like deep the show is and how complex it does get. The one line that I think sums up the whole of the actual series BoJack Horseman is, again, in that Charlie Rose, where he is again discussing horsing around, and he says, he's going off on a tangent about it, but he says, but at the end of 30 minutes, everything's going to turn out all right. And it's like, I think I watched this for the first time, and I was just thinking, right, okay, yeah, it's going to be one of these kind of shows. And then you get to the end of something like, especially season 5, and even the end of season 2. And you're just because it's all going to be okay. It isn't going to be okay. I mean, I know we're going back to how the show started and what's to come, but is the end of the show just going to be like one big, a horse walks into a bar and the bartender says, like, why's the long face? I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, I think that would also, that would be something that BoJack has kind of become known for, which is like this ability to comment on things and like satirize elements of culture, elements of television, and like really get down to its bare bones and kind of expose the worst of it, or like, you know, do a whole, it's basically like the classic Simpsons ending in a way, where, I mean, the one that comes to mind is the end of Sideshow Bob's Last Gleaming, where Grandpa just comes in and goes, I'm gonna haul ass to Lollapalooza, and then everybody goes, here we go again. And I think if BoJack did end like that, then, I mean, I'm not saying that the BoJack and the Simpsons are, I mean, they kind of come at culture and society from a similar point, and I think to end on a parody note of something that's kind of so ubiquitous, like that kind of, hey, why the long face? You know, I think that would be a very good kind of BoJack ending after all of the crushing blows that we've had over the years. But no, I think this is what this episode kind of tries to do, but doesn't do it that well. Like, I think it gets better at that kind of parodying things, because Horsing Around is like, what's it called? That show that they have in Twin Peaks. In the first season, there is a fictional television show. It's like a soap in the first season of Twin Peaks. I want to say Dedication to Love or something like that. Invitation to Love, that's it. Invitation to Love. And Horsing Around kind of, I mean, I love the Horsing Around theme tune. I think it's fantastic. And I think it's enhanced at the start of, well, it's in that Christmas episode where you see the other cast members' names, and one of them is Bradley Hitler Smith. But I think this episode actually works harder to introduce Sarah Lynn, because she's the only cast member with a name. In fact, she's the first person to speak in the show.
Yeah.
Because she says, oh, I hate Mondays and whatnot. But I think with that line that you've mentioned, the you know, you just want to watch a show where 4 or 5 people can have some problems, but at the end of 30 minutes, everything's resolved and everything's fine. Because, you know, life is one hard kick in the urethra, which is, like, kind of a funny joke, but not really. But that line that you've picked up on, I think it, as much as Horsing Around is, like, a parody of those kinds of shows where they're not so well received critically, but for some reason they get 15 to 20 million viewers every day, like every time they appear, I think it's important that you've picked up on that, because BoJack clearly wants that meaning in his life as well, where at the end of every 30 minutes, he just wants his life to be okay. But I think what makes BoJack Horseman such a strong show in later seasons is that the actions of the characters in one episode will influence consequences in the following episodes. And that's, for me, that's when the show starts being good, because that's when the him stealing the D from the Hollywood sign in a later episode carries over to the next episode.
Yeah, I mean, that,
it's the first thing that isn't just rewound and like, oh, that never happened. And
because it almost seems like
Like with these first two episodes, especially two, I mean, is it ever really mentioned again? I mean, I'm in process of rewatching season one, but it's never really touched on again, is it? I mean, he'd still be hated for saying that the troops are jerks. Well, unless another bland TV show such as like Peanut Butter and Jelly has made him look really good. And that's, I mean, I remember the first time I watched, the first few times that I watched the show, and I did not like Mr. Peanut Butter at all, but I think now...
I put exactly the same note.
But now coming back round to him and seeing everything else, he's not likable, but the character's a great character, whereas before I were like, I hate this thing. The only likable character at the moment is... I say Diane. I'm not a Todd fan.
Yeah, I'd say Diane. I'd say Diane. I mean, I think Bojack's kind of... I mean, Todd's kind of likable, but he's presented as a bit annoying.
He irritates me with all that hooray stuff. I am not a fan of that.
Hooray! A Todd episode. I don't know. The thing with Mr. Peanut Butter in this episode is that he's actually no different than how he usually is. Because in the first season, I was speaking... The friend who actually showed me Bojack Horseman came up with, like, a great character analysis for Mr. Peanut Butter, which is just, like, you think that everything that he does is sarcastic and surface level. Like, Erica, look at you with that face. Or, hey, Bojack, I want to talk to you. And, like, you think it's so insincere. Like, this woman just said that she wants to have sex with me. I'm not going to have sex with you. No, I'm kidding. You're a good sport. You know, like, he looks like that proper kind of, and appears to be that proper, like, really sarcastic, loud jock type that's really full of himself. And he makes a big point about how everybody likes him and he likes everybody. And really deep down inside, he's just kind of playing people, he's evil or whatever. But my friend just kind of came up with this really, like, astute analysis of him, which is just, he is just a Labrador.
Yeah.
That is the way that he is on the surface. And it's a simple concept for his character, but it's, whereas Bojack is not what if horses could talk, but I think that's not Bojack's character at all. Bojack is more, what if a man looked like a horse? Whereas with Mr. Peanut Butter, it's like, what if Labradors had human emotions or like the ability to express themselves like humans do? And it means that in this kind of episode, he's very playful and excited and so sincere that it kind of flips back on itself and he comes across as sarcastic and insincere. And all the stuff that he does in this episode, right up until the sort of like the moment where you meet him and Diane together, like you are, that they're like an established couple. He annoys me because even with all of the, I don't know what it is, but like he annoys me in this episode and I feel so bad because I know that it's just him, but like I feel like first impressions of him have never changed. Like he's my favorite character now, but in this episode, my first impression of him can never be wiped away. And I don't know why.
Yeah.
But, so the one character we've actually not talked about yet is my second favourite character from the show, actually, Princess Carolyn.
Yeah.
Princess Carolyn is a character that means a lot to me and my friend who got me into this show. And there are little things of her in this episode that, with everything that happens to her, this ability, or should I say inability, to land on her feet, to balance her professional and personal life. So much of it comes through in her dialogue in this episode, and I just feel so sad listening to her, because she's like, I'm always very good at separating my personal life from my professional life. That's why you're my ex-boyfriend, but I'm still your agent. And I feel so sad for her every time I look at her, but especially in this, when I know what's to come to her character and what she's been through already. And,
I mean, again, she's yet another character that initially I find annoying, but I think it is just because I think she looks like just another stereotypical Hollywood agent. And
yes.
I can't get behind her at all. I mean, obviously later on, as she becomes, she's up there for me. And again, with what she goes through, it is a subversion of cats always landing on the feet, because I mean, although you could say that she does, because time and time again she's knocked back and knocked down, and she's still there, but she, I mean, how much more bad stuff's going to happen to her?
Well, there's that line that she does, isn't there, as well as the always land on her feet. There's that bit in like season 3 or 4 where she's like, gotta keep ticking, I keep ticking. You know, it's this idea that she's like a clock, yeah. That it's just kind of like what she has inside her that keeps her going is metronomic. It's machine work. It's, she can't be knocked down. And I think, I don't know, I feel so sad for her. But in this, I think in this episode, I like the twist, to be honest, that she's his agent as well. I think that's a pretty neat twist.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because it looked like just a stereotype. Oh, here's another girl that he's, you know, that he's, again. I mean, because on my rewatch, I'm living with grandparents at the moment, so, you know.
Right. Oh, so do I.
And,
well, grandparent.
It's like, yeah. She walks in and Burjack's, I think he's just he's pulled that bird, and what about a mulligan? And it's not Carey.
Oh,
mulligan,
yeah, the
but, and my grandma walks in and she sees
everybody gets a mulligan, yeah.
and she sees this and she just walks straight back out, almost like Grandpa Simpson, like walking into the burlesque house. And it's just like, it's just not right. It's not right. I said, well, come on, Grandma, like, you can come and be on show as well. No, you're okay.
Yeah, that's well, that's actually one of the better jokes in the episode. Actually, the Bojack, I'm almost there.
Oh, that's good comedy. I mean, I thought he then debuted the line that I also is it embarrassing to say? Did you get there after 10 seconds? He says that. I think it's later on this season. Did you get there? Because she clearly did not. But it's just like, maybe that's why I find him so relatable, because I am also a terrible, terrible man. But I don't know. I have no idea. But
go on, sorry.
I mean, where do you see, like, Princess Carolyn's arc? Like, I mean, where do you, where do you see it going?
Well, obviously, like, we know where it goes, but, like, I think at the moment she's just kind of introduced as a character who will pop in and out.
Yeah.
She will be his agent, then she will moan at him and he will have an argument with her, and then he will say something horrible to her, and then she'll go, oh, you're such an arsehole. She will walk out of his house and then ring him. By the way, I got you that audition. That's kind of the gag that they're going with this at the moment. Obviously, she becomes well more well-rounded, but I want to talk about just the jokes in this episode, just the humour, like, whether they work for you, like, because I think this is my main downfall with this episode, where, like, I think on a character level it's fine. The characters are all a little... Yeah, I think the characters are all a little abrasive.
Yeah.
And I think that's why they kind of come off a little, like, Princess Carolyn is who she is, but she does seem a little abrasive at first. Bojack especially, definitely Mr. Peanut Butter. Diane is so kind of like sheepish and cute in this episode that she doesn't come across as abrasive. And Todd is, as he is throughout the show, he is a background character that has his own journeys and own little strange, wacky schemes to go off and do. But the jokes in this episode are mixed for me. I think this is where this episode has a big failing. And I think it's the sometimes there are jokes that are good and that I laugh at and that I enjoy. Like, I quite like the fact that Bojack is a very disappointing lover. I think it paints quite a lot of his character in it, because he's like, he's clearly a guy in his early late 40s, early 50s, who is more interested in alcohol and cigarettes and selfishness than he is in just kind of respecting the person that he's with. He's obsessed with himself. So I like that joke, but, and I also like the cutaway gag with the car crash, with the, hey, aren't you the horse from Horsing Around? And I don't mind the Todd with his 10 minutes later, what were we talking about? Like, that was pretty funny.
That's like a rare Todd line that I like. A lot of the jokes.
In this episode.
A lot of the jokes.
Just
generally. Yeah. In this episode, I mean, I don't get to liking Todd, humor wise, until he gets involved with Mr. Peanut Butter later on.
Okay, yeah.
But a lot of the, well, I'll say jokes, only really land in this episode for me because of Will Arnett's delivery. Just like how he says things like chapter one and then repeats it three times, and that's one of the funniest things of the episode.
Chapter one.
And like Neue Jose, yeah. And it's just Neue Jose works on every level only if Will Arnett is saying it for me.
Yeah, the voice cast, actually, like, I didn't realise how much I love the voice cast, like, before I watched the show. Like, I didn't know that Job was voicing BoJack Horseman. I didn't know Jesse Pinkman was voicing Todd. I didn't know Annie was voicing Diane.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. You know, that they were three shows. Breaking Bad, Arrested Development and Community were three shows I watched over and over and over again in my last year of college and first year of uni,
yeah.
And then show to everybody else that I knew. So to have them three delivering these jokes feels kind of like there's a joke at the end of the episode that no matter how many times I watch it, I still think they take it one step too far. Like, it's all well and good doing extended gags. Like, Cape Fear, one of the best episodes of The Simpsons, was written as like a last attempt at silly humor from the original writing team. That's why all of the jokes are longer than they should be, completely nonsensical. Like, the Sideshow Bob steps on rakes thing goes on for 30 seconds because they have to fill 20 odd minutes. Bart goes to both ends of that boat and he sees crocodiles, then eels, then crocodiles, and he's like, oh yeah. And there's like bake him away toys. Oh no, dad's been drugged. No, he hasn't. Like, there's loads of silly jokes in here.
No, he hasn't. How Marge says no, he hasn't. That gets
no,
me
every
time.
He hasn't. Yeah. But with this one, the whole Mr. Peanut Butter Diane thing with BoJack, when he realizes and he's like, you are with him. Yes. You and her. Yes. You are together. Yes. This penis has been inside this vagina. Yes. In a sexual way. Yes. Like, first of all, what does in a sexual way even mean in this context? Is he accusing Mr. Peanut Butter of raping Diane, and that's how they're together? Or, like, I do not find it funny. I really find it quite painful to watch,
it's
especially
cringy.
When other people are around.
It's like there's no class behind that. It's just base level humor. It is what puts me off a Family Guy and things like that. It's just like, let's drag this out.
I mean, I might destroy my credibility here, not that I really care, not that I had any anyway, but, like, the first kind of six or seven seasons of Family Guy are pretty good, I think, just as someone who says this. Like, I'm not saying that BoJack Horseman having similarities to Family Guy puts me off because I hate Family Guy. It's just that BoJack kind of, it presents itself as a show that is, in the beginning stages anyway, when it's not quite up to speed, it still presents itself as a more intelligent show. That has, like, the cutting-edge humour, the inside track on stupid Hollywood celebrities and celebrity culture and what it does to people. Like, it presents itself like this, whereas I feel like it hasn't earned a shred at this point of this soapbox that it kind of puts itself on. And I think that's, as we move towards talking about the second episode, that's what really puts me off the second episode. I don't know about you, but I mean, we can round off about this first episode because we've kind of reached the end of the talking about the plot. We've kind of reached the scene on the balcony, which has ended with him throwing. I mean, I like the gag with the candy floss. That's pretty cool. Where the mountain of cotton candy over his balcony and stuff. But have you got any like final thoughts on the first episode? Like, before we rank and rate
the end
it
of the
I
episode,
suppose?
The gag where they do keep repeating it about how to say Nguyen, and BoJack, he says to Diane, I don't want to mispronounce your name, and she says it's Diane. That's one of the better jokes of the show. Final thoughts on this episode? I mean, it made me want to keep watching, so I mean,
yeah,
if it were a bad first episode and I turned off, I wouldn't be able to appreciate, you know, what's to come.
Yeah.
But it's not a fantastic opening episode. You look at something like a Breaking Bad, it's a different show. But, I mean, The
God
Simpsons,
damn it, that Breaking Bad pilot. Just thinking
Simpsons
about it.
The Simpsons first episode wasn't great. The Simpsons first, I think, entire season isn't great.
Season one is up and down, yeah. I think. It's got some really good episodes and some episodes that are, wow, ridiculously out of character. Like, startlingly so. Like, Homer planning to throw himself off a bridge. Like, you know.
That's as dark but, as they get. I mean,
yeah.
And this goes a lot darker, which I prefer. But, I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, it's good. It's a decent enough introduction to everybody. Everybody who needs to be introduced gets introduced.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's probably better than fine, having watched it again just an hour ago. Yeah. I did enjoy it more than I remember, and it's certainly better than episode two, which, I don't know, seems to get a lot of love, but onto the soapbox we go, I guess.
Yes. Just to round off my thoughts on episode one, first of all, just a couple of jokes that I really still enjoy from this episode. Like, it's the start of the Erica gags, first of all, which are some of the best throwaway gags in the show. And we also see Lenny Turtletop for the first time. He's just in the back of the restaurant, having a chat with two women, and then Princess Carolyn kind of nudges her shoulder towards him and directs Bojack's eyes towards him as well. I think this is decent. I think it's okay. Like, not all of the jokes land, but like, and some of the characters seem a bit abrasive. But going back, having seen all five seasons, I think you can see elements of later seasons kind of buried underneath this confusion of starting a new show. And it doesn't quite know what it wants to be, because it's kind of, I mean, the second episode has way bigger problems with this, but like, it's kind of caught between wanting to just be a regular comedy, and then it's also kind of caught between wanting to make a point about something or other, but its point isn't, I don't know, I don't think it's quite honed in on anything. It's just kind of like, it's a bit scattered for me, like, and it's a bit mixed. Like, all of the characters are perfectly serviceable, and they're all perfectly fine, and I would say that I quite like this episode, but it's just nowhere near the standard that we get even after the sixth episode of this season, as far as I'm concerned. But
no, I mean, it really kicks on into a different gear, like, come the second half of the season, which I'm glad it did. Mm-hmm. Season one, I mean, it is a mixed bag. This is probably one of the better episodes.
Yeah, one of the higher points, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not downer, and it's not, even like the last episode is okay, but I really do need to rewatch it again, because I've not seen the back end of season one for a couple of years maybe. But the fact that I remember, you know, the big moments from season two, having not seen it for the same amount of time, I think shows how, I say, powerful season two onwards is. But we'll get there.
So I would give this like a very, very, how are we ranking this? Like, are we gonna go all pitchfork, or are we just gonna do solid base scores? Like,
yeah, like 1 to 10. We can go Fantano if you want.
Yeah. A light D9 on this. I would go with a solid 6 on the first episode.
Yeah, I'd probably go,
if we're going to be Fantano about it,
high 6 to a low 7. Strong 6, low 7.
Right, okay. I will start an Excel document and I will keep track of these. So, second episode is Bojack Hates the Troops.
Bojack Hates the Troops, and I hate this episode.
Oh, I don't hate it, but, like, because I think there are little throwaway elements of this that are much improved from the first episode, but the general kind of, like, oh my god, this tries so bloody desperately. I mean, it doesn't try because it's not there, but, like, they don't exist yet, but, like, this tries so bloody hard to do what the third and fourth and fifth seasons do effortlessly.
Yeah.
Like, it tries to make a point about celebrity culture and news and, like, how it's a dangerous obsession for people, and how, like, the public are poison, and how social media is poison, and how, yeah, okay, maybe right-wing kind of, like, nationalism and, like, patriotism isn't that great, really. And it tries to make all of these points, but it makes them all so clumsily. Like, oh my god, I cannot believe, like, there is a moment in the bit where BoJack Horseman, he says that the troops are jerks, and then that clip is taken and then sampled and played on the news, and he's like, I think the troops are jerks. Is that not just exactly the same as the second Scooby-Doo film? I think Coolsville sucks. Like, is that really the level that we're dealing with at the moment? Like, this is your cutting-edge point on the way the news media manipulates people. Like, it does this so much better. Like, it does it so elegantly in the third and fourth season and fifth season that it's just so clumsy at this point.
It's lazy as well. I mean, I think the first half of the episode or the first quarter of the episode is, again, a lot of, you know, that BoJack, woe is me. He does say, when he says about Princess Carolyn, I was going to say catty, because you're a cat, that tickles me a little bit. But, even, you know, it's BoJack being bad BoJack, you know, sleeping around and just being very, like, cutting of everything. I mean, he's not very nice to Mr. Peanut Butter, who,
no.
Again, having rewatched it, rises up in my list of favourite characters. Just saying things like classic BoJack and the old tennis ball and chain.
That is a great line, tennis ball and chain. That cracks me up every time.
But the wordplay argument, that's the highlight of this episode for me. It's just wordplay. Well, it could be working harder.
I quite liked that. It should be working harder. And I quite enjoy the toaster strudel scene, just because they keep track of how many there are.
Yep.
Like, I love little attention to detail and stuff. And I love the jingle that plays over Princess Carolyn's, like, the whole music.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're walking alone, because Jellicles are Jellicles. And then it's like 10 minutes later and it's like, Angelicals are Angelicals. And I do find that quite funny. And I love her scratch pole with the mouse hanging off it on her desk.
Yeah.
And the fact that she has a mouse hanging off the TV screen when she's on the treadmill. And, you know, like, it's full of little details, like the they get much better at later, but, like, it's the irreverence of BoJack kind of creeping in.
Yep.
These little things that just appear in the background and keep you chuckling. And, but, oh my God,
I like the background, all the background and all the little attentions to details. I think there is an Instagram page, which it's been keeping track of a lot of things like that, and I'm a big fan of that. I'm not very active on Instagram, but that's one of the few people I follow, because
I'm going to find that.
I'll find it now, because let's see.
Well, while you're finding it, I just want to talk about a line that I think, if this episode was this line alone and then 19 minutes of fart noises, I think it would still be worth it, and that is the stealing a meal from Neil McBeal, the Navy SEAL, is not as good as your Courtney Portnoy stuff in later seasons, but oh my God, the episode is just kind of worth it for that alone. Like, this is not a good episode. I think this might be my least favourite episode of BoJack. But, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
stealing a meal from Neil McBeal, the Navy SEAL, is
either this or chickens. It's definitely something from season one. But that page is called, it's just called BoJack Hidden Jerks as well.
Okay.
But it's just, even when it cuts and it shows his parents, even all that's like too much. Like, it's just like, it's like paint by numbers for a sitcom, you know.
Yeah.
And if you look at the depths that goes and how dark that gets, I mean, I'm not saying for a moment give us everything now and get into that, because even at the end of the episode where they he's just opening up to Diane, his BoJack, and then camera pans up and we miss it all because I mean, I don't know,
the show isn't focused on that kind of stuff at the moment.
No,
I mean, I really love the rooftop scene at the end, to be honest. I think it might be my favourite part of the episode, where Diane and BoJack are just beginning to have that conversation. But the show isn't, you're right, the show is just not interested. It pans away. It's, nope, back in the 90s, I was in a very famous TV show. No, I wanted to listen to that conversation. BoJack the Horse. And it's like, it kind of shouts you out in a way. Yeah. Like, you want to investigate him more, and just as you begin to investigate BoJack's character a little bit further, it rips it all away. The one thing that struck me immediately about this episode, and it's one of the only problems I have with the show in later seasons, is just the fact that Todd is just completely disconnected at certain points. Like, at the end of season 4, he's basically just in another TV show.
Yeah. I mean,
and it gets a little bit that way in this episode with what he goes through, and I don't know. I mean, he's around, like, and he's present in a couple of scenes, like, especially when BoJack is on the phone to the news. The whale, what's his name? The whale, but you know, like, and he's around, but like, his plot, it just feels a bit disconnected. Like, he's already off on, like, a wacky side adventure, and I don't know, unless that was something really deliberate, like, this is the character who will be on the couch every now and again. Oh, but then he's gone, and he's off doing his own thing, and
he's just like, even the jokes that he's given in regards to Ayako and how she, and about how she wants to steal his money, it's like, it's just so, she wants a picture of my mother's maiden name. So, yeah, we get it. She's trying to rip you off.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know, it's like a late Friends gag about Joey. Like, where they basically just, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, in the first few seasons of Friends, Joey is a bit dim and he's a bit stupid. But, like, by season 10, they write him as if he's got learning difficulties.
Yeah.
Like, when he's actually talking to a bear on the phone. Like, did the writers not get to this point and think, maybe we have taken him a bit too far here. Maybe we've lost control of characterization. And with Todd, it feels a little bit like that. He's too savvy, even as a kid. Even in those earlier episodes, even in those later episodes where they do flashbacks to, like, Todd being 16 and 17 and stuff like that. Would he really fall for, like, I don't know, I don't buy into it. Like, it's nice that in the first episode or the second episode, he does that line where he says that he, let's not label things. Because that's something that obviously when it starts to not embrace but reckon with his asexuality later on, he doesn't like to put labels on things. Why do we have to put labels on things? And I like that he's, like, a bit panicked about doing that at that point. But I don't know. It's a silly side plot that's completely disconnected that fills out 20 seconds every now and again, yeah. But, and the best thing he does in this episode is drive that car out of BoJack's, like, lot.
Yeah.
Where the press are all going around his front gate. But, like, the criticism of the media in this episode, you can see what it tries to do, but it's in really, really broad strokes. Like, if you think about something from season 3 or 4 or 5, where, like, Girl Crush, the magazine that Diane ends up working for, that's, like, a fantastic way to portray a magazine like that, because it both embraces Girl Crush as, like, a progressive writing force, as, like, one of these websites that kind of forms by itself, makes a lot of money and gets a lot of ad revenue, employs loads of, like, progressive writers and women and puts them in positions of power. But at the same time, it's willing to kind of be subtle and careful with its criticisms of it, where it's like, yeah, you know, these websites, it's good that they're around, but quite often they can lead the charge on things that get forgotten. Like, how many times have certain websites, like, I don't know, I mean, BuzzFeed's, like, an easy target, so we'll just go for that. But, like, BuzzFeed have done an article, so-and-so is accused of doing this, and you should all cancel them, and you should tell them, and they should, you know, they're terrible, and they said this, and they said that, and they're awful. And then, because it's no longer a trending topic, they stop covering it.
Yeah.
And that's not something that's easy to criticize, because unless you're kind of in tune with social media and Twitter, you won't get that. And BoJack gets so good at criticizing that kind of stuff with Girl Crush, but with this episode, it's just like, the news media is bad and it manipulates people, and also nationalism is bad, and also patriotism, and the troops are normal people, they're not heroes, And, you know, it's just, it's kind of, it feels like it's preaching something to me that I already know.
Yeah. And, yeah. I mean,
again, it comes right back down to that Coolsville sucks thing from the Scooby-Doo 2 film. And, yeah, that's, yeah. What were you going
to
say? Sorry.
I mean, even when he does try to reach a point as well, and he's doing all his, Bojack's doing all the ranting at the end.
With the music behind him. Yeah.
And then they just cut away because Mr. Peanut Butter's got a bucket on his head and everybody chants bucket, bucket, bucket. And then Jelly becomes the real hero. I mean, that's an okay commentary on how everybody just moves on too fast in the media in Hollywood.
I kind of agree, but at the same time, I think the whole thing with Peanut Butter and Jelly is, I don't know, I think the disses on reality TV and stuff like Keeping Up with the Kardashians and whatever, like, can we edit this to make me look clever? You know, like, that kind of stuff, it's correct, but I think it's so easy to do that. Like, it is just so goddamn easy to make a funny joke about, like, oh, Kim Kardashian and the Kardashians and that show, and, oh, aren't they stupid, and aren't other people stupid for watching it? And it's like, no, people aren't stupid for watching Keeping Up with the Kardashians. It serves no greater or lesser purpose than any other TV show. It's just, I mean, yeah, okay, superficially it is, and to the outside world it is quite like vacuous, and you could argue that it promotes like wealth hoarding and capitalism and stuff like that, which I kind of get, but it's the kind of stuff that, again, it's just, I feel like this episode preaches stuff to me that I already know.
Yeah.
And no amount of funny throwaway kind of like irreverent gags that BoJack needs like more of in like elements of the later seasons. We'll get to that. But like, I don't know. I just don't think any amount of those kind of jokes can ever properly make up for, like, how annoying the commentary is in this episode. Like, I completely agree with everything that it's saying, but, you know, like, good progressive statements do not a good episode make. Like, you know, it's just one of those,
I mean, you were talking about how people aren't stupid for watching, you know, Keeping Up with the Kardashians or something. But watching this, it almost makes me, it's like, am I stupid or am I that stupid that I need to be, you know, handheld
told
through
this,
through all their points and opinions? Because I get it, you know, it's just on the nose, which happens a lot throughout the early days of BoJack Horseman. It's too,
yeah.
I mean, it does a brilliant job of building a universe and dropping you straight in where humans and animals can all like mingle and live.
Yeah, you don't even think about it, to be honest. Like, they draw the characters well enough, I think.
But then you,
like,
just
literally
in,
visually
and it's
draw
just
them well
like,
enough.
Yeah, nice one. Here we go. But then, so have an episode like this. I mean, maybe it's because it's early, but, and I feel like if they'd have tackled this later on, it'd have been done so much better.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, there are elements of later episodes in this first season which I don't want to go into too much that I think really accurately represent where the show goes right in later seasons and it goes wrong in this season.
Yeah.
Because he's in both episodes and we've not really spoken about him yet, I want to talk about Patton Oswalt because he voices Pinky, the penguin.
Yeah.
And he also, I think I'm right in saying that he voices Neil McBeal as well. Or at least if they're different people, they have a very similar voice. But, I mean, one of my favourite ever background visual gags, and it's also the same as the friend of mine who got me into BoJack, his favourite background gag in BoJack is the mug that Pinky has, which is world's third best dad, which is just, like, just the best, like, visual gag. I think it's first season, too. It might be second season, but, you know. But he brings quite a lot to both roles.
Yeah.
I think he has... He's very, very good, even though he has basically the same voice, and I feel bad for saying this because it's basically Patton Oswalt's voice, but he brings a wonderful, pathetic quality to Pinky and a and a wonderful kind of like annoying quality to Neil McBeal. Now, I'm sure that Patton Oswalt is not an annoying, pathetic person with an annoying, pathetic voice, but what he does with his voice, to even though you know it's the same person, they're both clearly very different characters. Yeah. And like Pinky's not annoying, he is just pathetic. Neil McBeal is an is not pathetic, he is annoying, and yet, like, it's voiced by the same person, they do so much good work. I mean, Alison Brie does a hell of a lot of voice characters in the first couple of seasons as well, just to save budget. Like, she puts on a voice to do background female characters, which I think we'll pick up on as we go along. And I think she also voices Vincent Adultman. I could be wrong in that, but it sounds like her anyway. But, you know, I like what Patton Oswalt brings to both of these episodes. It's just that the work that he has to do with Pinky is a lot better and a lot easier for him to do with the Neil McBeal stuff, because Neil McBeal is just... I don't get him as a character. I feel like it's the kind of plot that I just want to end so that I can get on to better stuff.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to say about this episode, really.
I don't think he appears again, does he? And if he does, he might be in a background, maybe at a party or something. But
yeah,
it's like Patton Oswalt's like voice work in these, well, in this episode as well. To show that we had to have a look to see if he did indeed voice these two characters. Rather, I mean, it'd be obvious if it were Will Arnett or.
Yeah,
Aaron Paul, because they've got such distinctive voices, and I mean, I know Patton
and deep voices too.
But like Patton Oswalt, you know, he has a familiar voice.
He has that suitably high voice as well. I mean, the first time I ever saw Patton Oswalt in anything, and I'm ashamed to say this really, because Patton Oswalt has obviously had like a long career in lots of very good things. But the first time I ever saw him was as the university lecturer right at the start of 22 Jump Street. Like, that was the first time I knew his voice.
Yeah.
And now I've picked him up in, like, BoJack Horseman and stuff like that. But, yeah, no, that was the first time I ever heard his voice, and yet his voice is so distinctive that I knew exactly who he was when I heard him in the show. And, yeah, no, I'm... It's a shame that, I mean, I guess Pinky might come back in a more regular role in later seasons of BoJack. I can't see it happening.
I can't see that happening, because, obviously, print media is going to die out by the time BoJack finishes, and that's what he's representing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's very true. And obviously, speaking of print media dying, I love the kind of love the jokes of the lights going out at the publishing house, and the swamp monster, the swamp monsters of the deep, or whatever it is, all the merchandise and stuff that will come into this eventually. But rounding up thoughts, I guess we've kind of said our piece on this episode, though. We got on our soapbox, lol. But yeah, how would you rate this?
I mean, just because there's like a few decent kind of gags in, and again, it's all in the delivery. It's not necessarily anything overly funny, overly hilarious. I mean, you've got chortled with is it chortled with rapturous glee, and just things like that are just said, and it's like, oh yeah, haha. but it's middling, and it's like it's too preachy for me. I mean, I like a good preach myself, but no.
Yeah.
Not like this, BoJack, no. score-wise, low 5.
Okay. I think that this episode is, like, irreverent enough to be just about enjoyable. I think it's got one of the kind of classic running gags that you can shit post really easily, which is the, why do they always use the sneezing picture? Like, you know.
Which they always do as well, which is, I like.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's like you say, it's a bit preachy, gets on its soapbox about stuff I already know about, doesn't really do it in a particularly incisive or cutting or edgy way, or, like, it doesn't put forward anything particularly new that I didn't know about already or didn't think or feel. So I'm gonna go really low 6.
Yeah, I mean, it may hold up in like 10 years time if people do things differently, but I think people are still gonna be doing the exact same thing, and people are gonna be whinging about it, but they're gonna be whinging about it in a better way, in a more enjoyable way than this does.
Yeah. So I guess that brings us to the end of the first episode. Next time we will be back with Prickly Muffin, which is the episode that properly like introduces Sarah Lynn to the show. And we'll also be covering episode 4, which is Zoe's and Zelda's. So I look forward to those.
I look forward to these. I love episode 3 and how important it becomes.
Yes.
So that'll be an interesting... I'll have lots of notes for that. And we're not just going to be shitting on every single episode like we kind of have here. There will be some high marks eventually.
Oh, yeah.
But maybe a few episodes in.
Stick with us. This is a downer beginning. And it will not be a downer ending. We promise you that.
Like it.
Yep, so I've been a Rob Wilson type.
I've been a Samuel Cook type.
And we might be different types of people in the next episode. Please listen and find out. That was weak. But yeah, you know, you get the picture. So see you later, guys.
See you later.